Aaron Viola in the house from Fanboy Garage. We have Star Wars, Superman, Batman, the Penguin. Let's chat.
Everybody, come on, let's get down.
Get down.
Thank you, Freak Bass, for the music. And a quick plug, our last episode is myself, Freak Bass, and Bob Seska. We had a great conversation. Courtney Cheek, he's got some really cool stuff lined up, and so does Brian Chatlin. So we'll all be with you soon. We're going to do an in-person show in Brian's studio outside of Dallas, Texas. I'm in Houston, Texas, at the Casa. Where are you, Aaron?
Long Island, New York, y'all.
Yeah, baby.
In my home office. But hey, what's up, man? It's good to see you.
What's up? I've never, you know, I've been to Long Island, but not spent a lot of time there. Every time you and I hook up, we're in the city.
Yeah. I mean, it's a central point, and that's what everyone comes to see. They don't want to. It's got to be warm enough to come out to the island.
Where were we the first time we met in person? Was it Greenwich Village?
It was Greenwich Village. Yeah.
We had Minetta Tavern and that.
That's right.
Cafe Wah.
It's good spot. Yeah, Emily Ratajkowski, whatever her name is, Ratajkowski.
Oh,
the model was literally the next table.
Oh, that's right. I remember that now.
From us, yeah.
Yes. Well, David Lee Roth from Van Halen, his uncle owned Cafe Wah forever. I think he's passed away now, so I think Dave got it and sold it or something. But yeah, a little Van Halen. I always get a little Van Halen in there if I can.
Yeah,
I've been missing it.
Great burgers.
Great spot. I took my wife and stepdaughter there. Was that last year we were there? Dude, when was that? That's the last time I saw you.
Wait. You sure Cafe Wah is not Minetta Tavern?
No, Cafe Wah is the music venue that's just right around the
corner. Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's Minetta Tavern and those bars across the street and Cafe Wah.
Yeah, okay.
I love me some Minetta Tavern. Now. Yeah, dude. Yeah. Every time I go to New York, I have to go there. And people are like, no, there's 3,000 restaurants in New York. I'm like, yeah, but I know that one's badass, right?
That was a funny night. Because now you had like a full meal, and then like after a night of drinking and debauchery, we went and had pizza, and you had asparagus pizza. Well,
I did.
No, artichoke pizza. I'm sorry.
Artichoke, yeah. But artichoke, I had asparagus.
Yeah. But that was, it was like super late in the night.
Well, and Maddie early morning. Maddie Feck was with us, the amazing Maddie.
That's
Man, yeah. that dude lost all that weight and got healthy, and man, he looks amazing.
He's living his best life now.
That's right, man. What's up, dude? Let's talk, man. So, okay, you're in New York now. Eric Holzman was going to be on the show. Eric from Straight Outta Gotham and BOF, but he couldn't make it today. But I wanted him to come on. Well, we love Eric anyway, but I want him to talk about. He actually went to the Empire State Building and watched Empire Strikes Back. Yeah. Yep. So that's pretty cool.
Wait, are they playing the full movies?
Dude, he said he saw the whole damn thing. Specifically Empire, which just ties into the Empire State Building and all that stuff.
Yeah. That's a cool.
Yeah.
I guess you can consider me to be a pessimistic, traditional New Yorker. Not saying that Eric is not, but I'm like, I'm not going to sit outside or wherever to watch a movie I'm probably more comfortable watching at home, despite the fact that it's on a huge building.
Well, I don't think the point is to watch the movie to watch the movie. It's to watch it in that capacity.
Sure.
You know, and by the way, you and I had a private chat. Like, what are they tying this into? Obviously, all 9 episodes of the saga, the Skywalker saga, are going to be playing in theaters on May 4th. I'm assuming you're going to just watch The Rise of Skywalker back to back, right?
Oh, dude, sign me right up. Yeah.
All day.
I'll buy all the tickets. Yeah.
And then you'll go right and see like Attack of the Clones and you're good, right?
My favorites. Absolutely.
Your two favorite Star Wars movies. Yeah. But no, he said he was cool. And I wanted him to get real specific. We were talking on the phone yesterday and I said, dude, don't tell me anything else, because I'd rather you just talk about it on the show. So I never got a chance to touch base. Yeah. He said there was a lot of new merchandise and maybe some books or something, but nothing about
in Empire State Building. Like they're selling out of the building, or
yeah, I don't want to misquote him, but I believe that's what he was saying. That it was.
I'll be in the city next. Well, yeah, a week from this coming week, I'll make a point to go check it out, see what's going on, what the hubbub is.
Right on. Yeah.
You're
going to the office. Well, let's talk about the. I always feel like I'm going to F this up. Acolyte. I don't have a problem.
Acolyte.
I know what it is. I have a hard time saying it. I have a hard time saying
it. You're a country dude. I get it.
Oval. Oval's a hard one. Oval. Oval. Like the shape of an egg. Oval.
Oval.
So Acolyte. Acolyte. No,
Acolyte. I also have trouble saying my last name too, but let's not go there.
Well, you know, here's the deal. Like my buddy Jeremy Grokely, I just said it right. I always say Grokely because I've effed up both of you guys' last names all the years I was friends with both of you. And then when I finally learned to say it, it just wasn't fun.
Yeah.
So I gotcha. Why don't you say
Varola?
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
So this is exactly, it's just a trailer. And I know we spent a lot of time talking about trailers. I think
this is a trailer worth talking about, though, in my mind.
Well, it is. I just always find podcasts funny when there's a 2-hour episode on a 2-minute trailer. I've done it. Don't get me wrong. I've hosted them. So yeah. I'm guilty as charged. But this is right up your alley, bro. Skywalkers.
No Skywalkers. Yeah. And finally moving outside of the Skywalker saga timeline. I mean,
thousand years before Phantomist?
No. I think it's like a couple hundred, not a thousand.
Okay,
definitely not a thousand. But it is in the era of the High Republic.
Okay,
from what I gather, and I mean, this is the height of the height of the Jedi, right? Where they're not involved in the politics; they're purely, this body of Force users and whatever have you.
True keepers of the peace.
True keepers of the peace. Yeah, the Sith have been long gone. At this point, and this is the rise of the Sith power, right? The Sith who have been hiding out for a millennia, maybe. So, like, you know, you think about some of the things that get discussed in The Phantom Menace, and they talk about the sort of hidden nature of the Sith, and that they've been extinct for a millennia, and this is how they come to power, right? So maybe it is 1,000 years. I don't know, but when is a millennia? Is that 1,000 years? I don't know.
Hold on. Jen, is millennia 1,000 years? A millennium is 100.
He's talking to his wife. He's not talking to Alexa.
I got to watch out. Is it a millennia? Is it 1,000 years? Yes.
Yeah. So maybe that's what it is. Or maybe all of those people die. All of those characters die and no one ever gets a chance to report back that the Sith have returned.
Maybe.
I don't know. But I'll tell you what. It looks epic.
It does look epic, and for someone like yourself that wanted a different timeline, you've got it. And there's enough Star Wars-y things in there for nostalgia purposes. I mean, you have all the aesthetic of the prequels and from the internal shots anyway.
Right.
You've got where the Jedi Council sits. You've got the younglings. You've got Wookiees. You've got how long do Wookiees live?
It's Chewbacca. Hundreds of years.
Hundreds of years. So maybe no Chewbacca, but that's like his uncle or something, great uncle, and then.
There's a famous Wookiee Jedi from the High Republic era of stories that they're telling now, and there's some rumors that could be one of the Wookiee Jedi.
I like that we're getting different Wookiees. I mean, the first time we saw it was in Revenge of the Sith.
We may
have seen it in Return of the Jedi if Lucas didn't decide to sell more toys, which he did.
Right
for
the
but
the little murder bears.
Little murder bears. Brilliant. I had a freaking lunchbox with those guys on them.
Yeah.
But I like that we're getting additional Wookiees.
I think the cool thing about stepping out of this era is it feels familiar, but it's also unfamiliar.
Correct. Right?
Like that's it better still has the aesthetic of Star Wars, all the things that you mentioned, the things that we've kind of seen before, like the council chambers and all that stuff. The robes are slightly different because they come from a different era. The spaceships are going to look a little different. The technology is going to be looking a little different, but it's still Star Wars. You know,
it's still Star Wars. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it has a lived in feel to it. And you know, it comes back down to the classic, you know, good versus evil thing that I think everyone, you know, gets excited about. It's palpable for everyone. So,
yeah, it looks great. It's got a good pacing to it. It still looks like it's TV, not cinematic, but it is TV and not cinematic, so that's okay.
Yeah,
you know, there's going to be limitations with that, and it's weird because we grew up with the films, but then again, the prequels kind of took a step backwards in a lot of ways, even though technology had advanced with CGI. A lot of that CGI, there's shots like in Attack of the Clones. It's a scene I really like. It's when Anakin goes to find his mother. He's going through Tatooine.
Yeah.
You can just tell that's a painting in the background, or a
map painting,
like a And so anyway, so it's okay.
That's not when he's on the land speed on the speeder bike.
Yeah.
Going through the desert.
Correct. So it's okay if things look a little, I don't even know the word I'm looking for. I think it's, there's, we kind of judge these things on a curve a little bit with Star Wars, right? Cause there's, it's like this beautifully flawed franchise anyway. But I will say I'm looking forward, jumping around a little bit here, for Star Wars to be back in the theaters. And I am going on May 4th. I really, honestly, I think I'm going to watch 2, maybe 3. If I do, it'll be Empire and the Last Jedi. For sure.
To watch them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Out of the 9.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know why. I just kind of want to experience those in the theater again.
Yeah. Those, it's funny. I do. I've never seen Empire in the theater. So I would definitely go check that out. And then The Last Jedi. Yeah. I would love to see that movie again. We've talked many, many times about The Last Jedi, but I remember having really, really mixed emotions after coming out of seeing The Last Jedi. I called my buddy up right away and I was like, dude, I don't know if I like it, love it, or absolutely hate it. And I was like, man, there's just a lot. It moved so many things forward for me. And I'm like, I feel uncomfortable with the film. And then as I sat and thought about it and watched it again and again and again, I mean, I absolutely adore that film. I think.
Yeah, so I do too. And I told this story a million times also, but that was a very intimate press screening. I saw that movie like a week and a half, 2 weeks prior to coming out. That and Spider-Man Homecoming were two places I was at, two press screenings I was invited to that were really way out. And so I was under like massive embargo. And I remember there was like 5 of us in the cinema and I watched it and I was like, what the fuck did I just watch?
Yeah.
And we went to a bar next door, the theater, and we all just sat there and like kind of talked quietly. I remember one point our waitress was like, did you guys see the new Star Wars already? No, we're talking about it.
We're really excited about it.
Talking about Val Kilmer and Batman Forever. and then I saw it the second time in the theater with an audience, and I fell in love with it. And by the way, just for the record, my screening, when Leia flew, people were like excited about it.
It's kind of funny how weird. We had the same reaction in our theater, and it's kind of interesting to hear how that's vilified now. I think it goes back to, you know, maybe it's just the way that it's shot and it's framed and it's the filmmaking that doesn't really do it justice. But the fact that she grounds herself in the forest and brings herself closer to the ship is totally Star Wars. I mean, again, I've talked ad nauseum about stuff like this.
Absolutely. Like, it is.
You read the books. There are things that Vader does about launching himself into space and pulling himself to ships and breaching hulls from outside with the Force. So, like, come on, y'all. Chill out.
I really like this stuff. There's some of the best Vader stuff in the Obi-Wan series, just in my opinion. There really is.
There's some good stuff there.
There's some really good stuff.
It's too bad you've got to get to, like, the last couple of episodes.
Oh, come on now.
Let's not talk about Obi-Wan.
There were some weak moments. Yeah,
definitely some weak moments.
For sure. Like, inexcusable that whatever that alien was that was chasing Leia just runs right into the tree. Like, how did that even get past editing? Like, that's really bad. I mean, you wouldn't even have that in a student film. That's how bad that is. And then the rest of it's great. It's weird.
I do want to touch on one thing that you mentioned, though, about the sort of look and feel of the Acolyte, kind of bringing it back to what we were talking about and it not feeling like a cinematic thing. And I think there's some interesting stuff happening with, I always think about Lucasfilm and I think about Star Wars and I think about, you know, how ingrained and sort of intertwined George Lucas was in the technology of filmmaking. And I feel like there's a lot of stuff that shows like The Mandalorian have done. Like, these are industry first, I guess, like experimentations that have become part of filmmaking, right? Like filming on the volume, for example, like The Mandalorian being filmed on the volume with like not using green screens, but using actual LEDs, you know, that surround sound sort of
right.
visual look. I mean, that's what's producing the sort of aesthetic of these Disney Plus shows, right? They're cheaper. You don't have to build the sets, all that crazy stuff. And it's funny because I feel like there are certain moments in those shows where I think it's the way they're shooting, like the way that they're framing characters. Like you always get this, like one person on the left side, one person on the right side. And you can tell that they're being filmed on a volume because things sort of feel deep and not very deep. But then you look at the space scenes, and I'm thinking about stuff in The Mandalorian, like season 3, where it's the first episode where he's kind of zipping around space, shooting down the pirates. And that looks amazing.
It does look amazing.
You Absolutely. Know, it feels cinematic. And, you know, and then there's some other bits and pieces where you're like, yeah, that kind of feels a little not so big.
And that's my only true complaint about Obi-Wan, is that you have Vader and Obi-Wan. That should have been a movie. Period. I know you weren't asking for that movie, but that should have been a movie. And for that very reason, because there's some moments in that that look cheaply that shouldn't look that way, because that's Obi-Wan and Vader. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Disney Plus, I think, is also a great bridge between, you know, because what it's doing too, it's building out the lore, because you can't be releasing all these movies. I don't think it's sustainable anyway. It's much less risky to do it on TV. And then now these films can draw from that. Watch when we call it the Rey movie. What's the film actually called, or what's the working title? Do you remember? Fallen Jedi Order or something like that?
No. I'm not really sure what that
is. Is there one? Anyway, let's just call it.
There is one, but I know that there's that James Mangold film, Something of the Force.
Yeah. We'll just call it the Rey movie. So the Rey movie, because it's in, you know, in that time, it's in that continuing timeline. Think about all the things it's going to draw from. There's going to be all sorts of references to things that are going on. And then you've got the Mandalorian movie. I'm excited for that, actually.
Yeah.
Who's going to be there? I bet. What's the actor's name? He's
Pedro Pascal.
Pedro Pascal. Thank you. Pedro Pascal may just be doing the voice of that thing. I don't know if he's even physically be on set. Has he been? I don't think he was in season 3.
I mean, the dude is getting paid buku bucks as the Mandalorian, and probably puts the suit on like once.
Right.
You know, right. And that's for probably like press screenings. Like, oh, I'm going to do this EW shoot. Let me get this costume on.
Yeah. But the voice is so great.
It's like, iconic. It's iconic.
So
my son runs around with a Mandalorian mask. He literally had it on like a moment ago. And, you amazing. Know, he pushes the button. He's like, we could do this the easy way, or we could do this the hard way. Or something like, you're either coming in cold, or you're coming in whatever it is that he says.
So your son is 4, right?
Yeah.
And he's running around with
Mandalorian.
With Mandalorian that launched in 2020 or 2019?
2019. He started watching when he was born.
I thought Star Wars was dead, but that's a rumor I heard, I guess.
Yeah, I guess, you know. It's whatever. The next generation. He loves Grogu, you know. He wants to watch.
Of course.
Darth Vader. He's got Grogu bed sheets and
Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
Baby Yoda and then Papa Yoda. Right.
There. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had that guy since 19.
Oh, right here. Well, hold on. If you can pan up on my camera here, we'll see that. There you go.
Oh, your Vader thing. Look at that.
Yeah. That's a life size Vader helmet.
Oh, dude. That's dope.
From, I forgot the name of the, it's a, it's like one of the only companies that had the access to the Lucas vaults to get a mold of the original.
That's dope.
Vader helmet. So it's actually off-centered. What's the word? I'm totally blanking on the word. It's uneven.
It's uneven. Okay.
Yeah, like the cowl fits, like the headpiece fits kind of awkwardly, and like the masks are off, the little dials on the on his mask are off.
Who's the actor, British bodybuilder again? David Prowse, thank you. So who's under that mask? Is it David Prowse, James Earl Jones, or Hayden Christensen?
In my
or
mind?
Or Sebastian Shaw?
In my mind?
Is it Sebastian Shaw? That poor guy.
Yeah. I feel that's probably James Earl Jones.
His ghost is dead.
It's interesting. Have you ever heard the lines? Because David Prowse used to deliver.
Oh yeah, dude.
That, yeah, it's just a weird voice.
Well, and you know when he had to, and it gave him something to do. It's just like, oh my gosh, why am I going blank on everybody's damn name? He's rest his soul. The original R2-D2 actor.
Oh, R2-D2. Oh, something. Oh God. No, is it Baker?
Something Baker? Baker. Is it Baker?
I think his last name is Baker. Kenny Baker.
That's it. Yeah. He was talking about in the documentary how he goes, I would get in that thing and like I would smile and to give it some personality and give it some purpose, you know. Let's on that Yoda note, real quick, Acolyte. Yoda's got to be in it, right?
Because he's what, 900 years old, so yeah. I imagine so. And so is his the female Yoda, Yaddle. You know, who's on the council? So, I imagine seeing.
Yeah, Yoda. That'll be good. Yoda. That'll be a good little.
Maybe it's a Padawan Yoda.
Maybe and is it CGI or puppet?
Oh,
it had to be puppet in The Last Jedi, but in I don't know.
Man, it's kind of hard. Mm-hmm. I feel like it should be puppet.
Yeah, maybe.
I feel like it should be puppet, and it's funny because I look back on the re-released versions of, you know, Attack of the Clones and all that stuff, and the Phantom Menace when they had the puppet there, and then they swapped them out for the CG version, and just the CG version looked fine.
Just in the first film.
But the first film, it was odd. I never liked it. Even when I saw it in The Last Jedi, I thought it was a little weird. I thought it was a weird looking.
Yeah, he's never looked exactly the same. But he looked better. He looked better in The Last Jedi than he looked in The Phantom Menace.
Yeah, I agree with that. But there are people. There are people out there who are creating puppets that look exactly like Empire Strikes Back.
I love the scene.
He can't look that old, though. Let's be real.
No, yeah.
We've got to de-age him a little bit.
Yeah, de-age him a little bit. I love the way the CGI Yoda looks and the scene in Revenge of the Sith, where he's having his one-on-one, you know.
We're in the meditation room?
Yeah, with Anakin.
Yeah.
It's great.
That's a good scene.
It's a great scene, and he just looks really badass in it.
But dude, I mean, think about it like this.
It's a great performance of the Yoda in that movie, period.
Frank Oz.
Yeah, dude.
What technology does today, though, is, I mean, they could do, you know, a deep fake of a puppet Yoda and pull it off.
Frankly. Yeah, they probably could.
There are little things that you see in the puppet Yoda that you don't really get in like a digital version. It's a little like twitch or wiggle in the ear because the puppeteer is like shaking it, and you get the sense that there's something there.
Yeah.
That's the shit that throws me off when I don't see that stuff. But then I see it in, you know, The Last Jedi, and I was like, oh, you know, he looks kind of like a happy, like weird looking Yoda. Like he's had way too much weed, but okay, cool. I'm down for it.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Stone Yoda. I wonder if
he's like,
maybe he's into edibles. Okay. I guess we just end the Star
Wars. Mushrooms on Dagobah.
I think this is kind of where we end the Star Wars talk, because now we're talking about Yoda doing mushrooms.
Yeah, but we didn't even really talk about the Acolyte, frankly.
Well, no, but no, we did though. Like it's a trailer. It looks great, and we have high expectations for it. They're going to drop two episodes back to back.
Yeah.
When is that?
June something, sometime in June.
All right. So
like in the scene, so I'm just going to drop this on you real quick.
Okay.
It looks like they go back to Octo from The Last Jedi.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The island.
I didn't catch that. I need to go back.
So there's one of the last scenes in the trailer. Who is the Acolyte? She's like on an island, and there's a hooded figure standing on a cliff.
Oh.
And she comes up, and if you look at the surrounding area, it looks like Octo. And that would blow my effing mind. We curse on the show, right? Yeah,
we right. do.
Anyways, I'm not going to just reverse myself and say fuck. But anyways.
But you got it in there anyway.
I got it in there anyways. It would blow my mind if that's where they are, considering what we know about Octo and that being the first place of the Jedi Order, the founding place of the Jedi Order, and its connection to the dark side.
Correct. I'm telling you that there's going to be enough stuff in there for us to be satisfied in a nostalgia way, but it's fresh and it's new and it's we need to confirm how far before the Phantom Menace it is. It's at least a few hundred years.
It is for sure 100.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not just 100. It's like at least several hundred, but I think it's 1,000, dude.
Okay.
All right, man. So I'm excited for that to drop, and let's talk about it. And then, did you say which two? Like, you had to choose two films on May 4th. What are you going to go see? You can only choose two.
I think it'll be the same. It'd be
Empire and Empire. All right, Empire and Last Jedi. Awesome.
I mean, because I saw The Force Awakens maybe three times in theater, and it got a little more diluted as I was watching, and I was like, let me stop watching that.
It's it's a fun movie.
Yeah.
And the second one is an epic masterpiece. It just is. I basically die on the hill. And the third one is another fun movie. Yep. Not okay. Moving on.
Once. Barely got through it on the rewatch.
Oh, come on. We're gonna watch it together one day. I'm gonna make you like it. All right. Moving on.
Hell. Okay.
So let's talk a little Batman, shall we?
Let's do that.
Vice News has this new documentary that came out that's called Unearthed Icons. Yeah, Unearthed Icons. And episode one, I think it's a four-part series. And this episode has Robert Wool, who played Knox in Batman 89. And he's great. And it has a lot of people. Billy Dee Williams. Michael Uslan, who is the... I mean, he gets all the credit in the world for bringing.
He's getting a lot of time.
If it wasn't for him, we wouldn't even be here.
I mean, so I know nothing about this man. You know, I've followed you and some of the BOF guys for many, many years. So I knew that he had something to do with, you know, the prominence of Batman. Did I know that at 20 years old, for $50,000, he bought the rights to Batman?
About the movie rights for
Batman? No way. This dude is swimming in money.
Yeah.
What are you doing on a show like
every,
that?
I would be in a
robe, in a velvet robe, smoking a pipe. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I've talked to him. I've not met him in person. Many have. He's a solid human, man. He's a good guy. Really friendly. But you got to give him all the credit in the world. I wanted this episode, though, to go a little bit more. Like, I felt like it was putting a little too much time on the actress that was fired as Vicki Vale. What's her name? Terrible with names. Whatever. It doesn't matter. She's on there a little too much, and she is super annoying. Like, no wonder they got rid of her. What a beating. And then I remember her.
Like, it's funny because I've watched Blade Runner, and she's God. I don't know. Remember her name either. I don't know why. I'm just totally.
Is it? Yeah, I'm just going blank. Whatever.
But I remember her from Ace Ventura, as Ray Finkel.
Yeah. Well, she was talented and is talented. She's just I can see her being a pain in the ass on the set.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that movie without Kim Basinger, dude. Like, she helped make that movie what it is. She was an integral part of that whole thing. I am glad they got rid of the horseback riding BS. But what I wanted in that episode one was a little deeper dive on Michael Keaton. I just feel like it got brushed a little bit on his casting. Like, I just as it was getting, I thought cool, and then it like just stopped.
I'm watching it on I think it's on YouTube. And they're, you know, they're cutting it with like the same like, oh, four part series stuff that they're talking about. And it was interesting because I felt the same way. Like, they talked about it, and whatever actor's name that plays Knox, I forgot his name again already.
Robert.
That guy says if there were social media today, he would not have been cast. And I was like, you're 100% right. Let's go into that. And then it's like, no, we're gonna go into the next thing.
Yeah, hashtag not my Batman.
Mr. Mom, not Batman. Like, people writing to their congressman and all of that. But you know what? And this is the problem with documentaries sometimes, is like, there's a lot to chew on, but they're not focused on the storytelling narrative for this segment. Meaning, you set it up with like, you know, there was this thing that people hated about him. They talked a little bit about why he was selected. It was his eyes. And then you kind of expect there to be like, and then he does the, you know, he does like a quick little shot, and we put him in the suit, and we like knew right away that was our Batman, and blah, 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 blah. Like, they didn't even get there. It's like, on to the next thing.
Yeah, and I would like to have some mention of Clean and Sober, because that was a dynamic performance prior to that movie's release that I think was an important part of the conversation. But one thing I really loved about it, and it's very well made, by the way, these are minor quibbles. I enjoyed it, but was the emphasis on the eyes and how important the actor's eyes are for that role. And not one actor that's played that part, and we've not had a bad Batman. Ben Affleck's is my least favorite. George Clooney's my least favorite movie, but
I'd say the closest to me and may surprise people is Robert Pattinson.
Oh, dude, he's incredible. And so is Christian Bale, and they're both incredible.
Yeah, but the eyes,
Pattinson's eyes are
Pattinson's eyes, like, and you see it when he takes off, when he's got the panda eyes, and it's just like all the rage that's sitting back there.
The rage, and then the scene where he's got Selena wired, and she's in the night. He's trying to get her to record all the nefarious characters.
Yeah, yeah.
The way he's looking at, the way he looks, and then when he's looking at the Riddler at the diner through the
that stuff. And the last bit I'll mention about the eyes thing is when it's in the beginning of the movie where you first see him and he looks at the kid and he looks. That scene, that, like, right there, and you see his eyes and you see the compassion in those eyes. Dude,
it's the mayor's son. And it's a great scene. In fact, that scene to me is Matt Reeves letting us know, and I could be wrong, that Robin. There can be a Robin in this world. Yeah. It could work. So the Batman 2 was pushed up. Speaking of the Batman. Mm-hmm. Oh, so anyway, the documentary. So the Vice documentary, highly recommend it though. If you're a Batman
fan. Really good.
Every Wednesday, episode 2 comes out this week. So I'm looking forward to it. We'll talk more about it. Please don't fall. Thank you. Every time I'm here, this multi-million-dollar studio just gets. And I threw this together pretty quickly today. All right, we still good?
Hey, we're rolling. A portable one. I've got mine on an arm.
Anyway, I did the last show at the apartment in Dallas and with Bob and Freak, and so I transported all my stuff. I just set it back up, and it's a little shaky right now. Moving on. We're moving on. So anyway, but the Batman 2 was pushed up a year. A lot of people were concerned about that. I'm not. There's a lot going on, dude. There's a little change. There's changes at DC, the James Gunn stuff, and we also just came out of the strike, and everything's effed up and pushed back and moved around. Like, everybody calm down. It's going to happen. There's no way that James Gunn is getting rid of that. It has too much goodwill. It made money. And then on top of that,
they've shelved other projects. So
I understand, but they haven't, this is a standalone thing.
Yeah.
This doesn't interfere with,
wants to do.
They shelved other things because, like, we're not doing another Wonder Woman because I'm going to create my own.
Yeah.
And he may create his own Batman for his Batman.
No, he will.
Yeah, he will. But that's also, we know that, right? Yeah. We already know he's doing that. And Freakbase, when he was on last time, he was under the, he just has this kind of, he understands that it's a wild and unlikely, but he can't help but think, is this Batman tied to James Gunn world? And I don't think that's the case. I really seriously doubt it. And I would hope to God that he wouldn't do that. So I don't think that's
it's an interesting thought.
It is. And he had some valid reasons why he thought that, but
yeah, I mean, so it was supposed to be dropped on in 2025, which is going to be the year of Superman, right? That's when, that's when his new it's just called Superman, comes out, and maybe that gives him enough room. Right, like, let's the Superman universe and maybe some other corresponding stuff that he might throw on Max or whatever start to solidify that movie while you still get a little bit, like, a little taste of Batman, because you'll also have, Todd Phillips' Joker somewhere in there. So I think it's good to kind of let those two films in particular breathe.
Correct.
Because they're very different and they're not part of his connected universe until he makes his Batman and starts to do some of that.
Correct.
But I'm cool with it. I don't think the, like, and not having seen anything related to Superman, here's my thing. I don't think what he's trying to create and what the Batman represents can coexist in the same universe. He's leaning into, for Superman, the return of Otis, the return of Miss Tessmacher, the return of, like, certain characters that you automatically think, like, camp-ish, kind of funny, like, and there was none of that shit. I'm not saying you can't turn those characters dark, but none of that stuff is portable to the world that Matt Reeves has created in the Batman.
That's right. I don't think that there's any gods in this film.
No.
Whatsoever. And this is even more grounded than Nolan's trilogy, which I
100% agree.
Still love. Oh my gosh, just I love all three of those films so damn much. I will as well. But one thing I always wanted from Chris Nolan was a penguin. I wanted an Oswald Cobblepot, and in a weird way, I'm glad I didn't get it, because what we have right now with Colin Farrell and his performance in the Batman is that was an incredible performance. Yeah. And I want to segue a little bit here to the next chapter of the Batman saga. Right. And that's how this is being plugged, is that Penguin trailer that we just got.
Yeah.
Holy shit. In fact, I'm really bad at this, so bear with me, but let's see. I'm going to actually try to set this up to play it. But in the meantime, just give me a, what are your thoughts on the,
I mean, I think, first of all, Colin Farrell is unrecognizable again, because, you know, we were talking about quality of film, right? And I was expecting, oh, if they're going to do the show, you might feel a little bit of a downgrade from everything that we saw in the Batman. And thankfully, at least from the trailers, again, we're trying to react to like a minute and a half trailer. None of that seems to be the case. Like, it is still very much, you know, Oswald Cobblepot, the Penguin from the Batman. And it more so than I think, you know, we've experienced in the movie. But I just love the voiceover about like wanting to be this remembered gangster, this feared, you know, element within Gotham. I think that's a dope way of kind of framing the story.
Can you see it right now?
Yeah, it's up.
Let's watch this.
When I was a kid, there's a gangster, real old school type, Rex Calabrese. He was a big deal. He helped people. You saw you on the street, he'd call out to you. When I'm 14 or something, he has a heart attack and dies. Still holding a cigar. In my neighborhood, they throw a parade in his honor. A freaking parade. I mean, it wasn't fancy, but it was a gesture. A show of love. What he meant. Can you imagine to be remembered like that?
Good stuff, man.
Oh my God, dude. Like, it is. Hold on, I'm really slow with this shit, guys. My producer's off today. Wow, dude. When I and watching that, no way is James Gunn Superman in that world.
Nah.
That's the Sopranos. That's Godfather.
It's funny you said the Sopranos. That's exactly where my head was going.
That could not even be in the Batman universe, and it would still look amazing.
Yeah.
And what I really like is how this story is about him. I mean, hence the title.
Yeah.
And there's talk about is Pattinson in this thing. I'm sure that there's going to be a cameo and he's in the peripheral. He'll be there. Yeah. But it's not his show. It's not about him, but it is a bridge. And it's obviously they're advertising it as the next chapter of the Batman.
Yeah. Song. It's got to be that way. I mean, there's actually a vacuum to fill, right?
Oh my gosh.
Vacuum of power. And that's the opportunity there.
That monologue.
Yeah.
When he says he was a big deal. It just like you feel like that guy's really telling a story that happened to him. Colin Farrell is like, that dude's a legit actor.
Yeah.
And that performance, and also he's slowly morphing a little bit more into I don't think we're going to have a tall top hat and a monocle.
No, but you know, a kingpin.
But a kingpin. I mean, he'll have some kind of hat. I do want a weaponized umbrella at some point though. Something, even if it just has a blade on it. He's got to have that. But he's got a cigar.
Yeah,
we're not doing the cigarette bullshit. That's like in the 50s.
Yeah, he's got a nice, fat, thick
cigar. he wanted to smoke in the Batman. He goes, I gotta have some, but it's the Penguin. They're like, no, we don't. And Warner Brothers wouldn't let him do it. And so that's true. He's on record talking about that.
Wow.
And so he got his cigar. Yeah. So now we got to get some kind of hat, a weapon.
I feel like there was like some leak footage of him in a hat.
A hat
or something.
Yeah, he looks like Oz though, man.
It's an interesting decision with the makeup and all of that stuff. And I think it's great. Again, totally unrecognizable. Like, I remember telling my wife, you know, can you tell what actor that is? And she's like, I don't know who that is. I'm like, that's Colin Farrell. She's like, no, it's not. And I showed her the makeup process. And she's like, holy shit.
God, he looks like bad.
Pockmarked face, he's scarring.
They've got the hook nose.
All of that, you know, like thinning hair. He just looks great. And he's got this, you know, this waddle.
Yeah.
He's got like a brace on his leg. It's awesome shit.
He's the Penguin, dude.
I mean, he really is.
He is. Yeah. And you can see his motivations in this. And that he wants to be obviously in power. What's the word I'm trying to think of here? He wants to be remembered.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he wants to be a legend. And maybe this is where.
Like stepping into that penthouse.
That's right. And that it shows the shot of the last scene of him in the Batman too. Did you notice that?
Yeah. Yeah. Where he's standing by the window.
Yeah. The scene that looks like someone's maybe in jail. I thought at first that was probably the Riddler at Arkham. Cause I watched it on my phone. That's not him. That's not him. So I don't know who that is. The one that's
yeah. Playing. It's an interesting, you know, I think what I like about it is it's that transition to, you know, the gangster era of Batman, right? I mean, that's, they talked about, I mean, they'd say it in the Nolan films of escalation, mm-hmm. you know, at first it was, we wore body armor. Then they have like, you know, bullet piercing rounds and then you're wearing a cape. And now there's like the Joker character. And now, you know, you see it. It's like the era of the OG gangster has died. You've got now folks like the Riddler, the Penguin is stepping into his own. There's some other character, which I don't, it's the only like knock I have on the Matt Reeves thing is like the weird Joker thing character that they've got in jail. So they're starting to build, you know, that rogues gallery in a really cool way. I think if I'm being honest, I think it's no longer a trilogy for Matt Reeves. I think it's a two film thing and that's it. I think his third film is this show.
Well, and it could be something like that in terms of James Gunn wanting his own Batman, but we'll see. Here's the bottom line. He's got a story to tell.
Yeah.
If he does that in two films and two seasons of this, I just want him to finish his story.
Yeah.
If it's one season of this and three films, whatever, just tell the story. I think we've gotten to this thing where a trilogy is like this definitive
thing. Yeah, it's like encapsulated, like,
well, in the moment, bookended. In the moment we get a fourth Indiana Jones, all of a sudden that's no longer a trilogy.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. So,
I think that's an overrated franchise. I like the character is not overrated. He's fantastic, but I don't know, man.
I don't know. To me, it ended after three films. So
I think there's really only two really good ones, which is Raiders and Crusade.
Oh, dude, you can't say that to me. That's like telling me that Superman 4 doesn't exist. Like when that's the Superman of my childhood, like Temple of Doom was my childhood. So like, and no, nothing anyone's going to ever say is going to diminish, you know, Quest for Peace or Temple of Doom, because those things are iconic in my little brain from when I was a kid.
My favorite thing about Quest for Peace is every sitcom in the 80s or whatever and film had to have the goofy surfer guy, and so they had to give Lex a, and now that is him. Yeah. Oh my god, that's right. That's right.
Who ends up playing Lex Luthor.
He ends up playing Luthor. That's right.
Yeah.
Holy shit, that's right. That's funny. I sometimes forget about that.
Somebody said that to me on a video call once, because I've got a bald head and a beard, and someone's like, "Who's this Lex Luthor looking?" I'm like, "Lex Luthor, who are you?" Oh shit, really? Thank you for
Jonathan Cryer. That's really funny.
Fucking piece of shit.
Well, we're definitely gonna get the rest of Matt Reeves. He'll finish his story. However he does it, I don't care.
Yeah.
But that show looks incredible. I'm super stoked. With a little time we have left, man, we have another topic we were gonna talk about. We're just kind of bouncing around. I know.
Yeah, I think Beetlejuice was
Hey man, Beetlejuice. Man. The Beetlejuice trailer, that looked fun. I need to revisit that movie though. I don't
see, this is another one of those films where little Aaron, when I was sick, I had it on VHS, watched it religiously. Got in trouble all the time because someone would say something to me and I'd turn around and grab my dick and go, "Nice fucking model." Right? Like, yeah, in trouble, almost thrown out of school for doing some shit like that to somebody. So like, you know, first Beetlejuice film, only Beetlejuice film in my mind. You can't touch it. And then I see this and it was interesting. So I watched it and I was like, why are they doing this to me? I don't need another Beetlejuice film. You know, like, who is the audience? I go through all of these like emotions. Why are we watching this? Who the fuck is this for? Is this for me? Is this for younger generations? Like, there's never going to be another Beetlejuice film after that. So why the fuck are we making this? Did I ask for this? No. My wife sees it and she's like, wow, that looks fucking great. I'm like, you're the fucking audience. It's you. They want you, who is like 4 years younger than me, who like watched it maybe when you're like, you didn't live it. And then you're like, oh, that's cool. It's great. I'm going to go see it again. Oh, my Keaton looks great. Oh, look, Winona Ryder. Oh, my God. They brought back Kevin's mom from Home Alone. She looks fantastic. Well, and I'm like, no, they all look fucking old. Like,
no, they look old.
I don't want to watch this shit.
They are old. We're old.
And then they did, but then they dangled Jenna Ortega.
Yeah.
Oh, hey guys, well, look, it's Wednesday. It's the girl from Scream. Today's, you know, fucking whatever, Linda Blair. Here we go.
She is great though. I mean, she's a dynamite talent.
She's great. Yeah, sure.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. But we'll see. This could be in so dang. Sometimes you get so, I don't know.
I am, dude.
Lighten up. Lighten up, New York.
I get wound up with this shit. Because then you end up in an Indiana Jones situation where they're chasing the fucking dollar.
Well, but this is one. It's one movie. It's going to be a one-off. They're not going to do a third one. I think that what I would like to see is
how much it makes at the box office.
Well, that's true. If it's a billion-dollar film, there'll be a third one. But listen, I just want Michael Keaton to have some love reprising a role, because his performance and everything in The Flash was amazing. I still love that movie. Unapologetically, I do.
The Flash.
Yeah, I love that film. Dude, did you watch it?
Yeah, I watched it.
Yeah, dude. Anyway, I'm not getting into all that. But I love that we got Keaton in one more time, but I really hate that's how it ended, because no one saw that movie.
Yeah, I mean, also chasing the dollar. He doesn't need to do none of that shit anymore, man.
No, it's not about really the
dollar. He really doesn't. But it is. I mean, dude, if I were Michael Keaton and I read the script for The Flash and the line here, oh, you want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts. If I read that shit in the script, I'd be like, I'm not fucking saying that shit.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, you just took a moment where you actually look at Bruce Wayne and you go, you are crazy shit, dude. You breaking shit in front of the Joker, he's going to kill you. And then you just like throw it away. It becomes a throwaway line. Come on, guys. You want to end that? And we were talking about this, just to bring this full circle, dude. The eyes. It ain't there when he says it. That crazy look in his eyes is not there. So,
well, that's not what the purpose of the line. To me, that was just something that he said. That was just kind of a fun tag. And that's fine. That's a legitimate complaint. We could take that line out. But let's Beetlejuice 2. I'm going to go see it. Tim Burton is always hit or miss for me. Always has been. But this looks fun. All right. Let's wrap this up. But I'm going to ask you a quick question. Then we're going to do plugs and get out of here. We're talking about movies. We're talking about sequels. What is the worst sequel of all time? And I'm talking about a sophomore film. That can't, and to qualify, it has to be from something that was really fantastic. And you can't say Lost Boys 2 or something like that. That was some like throwaway shitty thing that never went to the theaters. That was straight to VHS. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm talking about from the same creative minds and cast.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an easy one for me. Cause I was actually just talking about this film the other day. It is a sophomore film, but it's technically not. It's called Once Upon a Time in Mexico by Robert Rodriguez. I fucking adore Desperado.
Oh, it's a Desperado.
Love Desperado.
Gotcha.
In my mind, that shit is nearly perfect. It's a great film.
I have a book from Robert Rodriguez. You know, he's Texan.
Yeah.
It's called, oh my gosh, what's it called? A guy without a crew or something like that. It's a story of how he became a filmmaker.
It's a great book.
And I've got it, and I've loaned it to a freaking friend that lives in Santa Monica. I never got it back from that person. Damn it, I need to order it, because I'm
watching that show. Bring it back.
Oh, dude, it's great. So that's yours.
That's my film. Okay, it is such a departure from
the other one,
Desperado. I walked out of the movie.
Yeah, that's not good.
Johnny Depp is in it. It's trash.
Interesting. So you want mine?
Go for it.
City Slickers 2.
Oh God.
And here's why. You ready?
Yeah.
First of all, the whole thing with
Kirby's brother.
His twin brother.
Yeah.
And which whatever. Put you know, have Jack Palance back in the film, so be it. John Lovitz, because Bruno Kirby and Billy Crystal had fallen out at that point, so he wasn't coming back. And they had done When Harry Met Sally together, and they had done City Slickers together, etc. But here's why.
He plays his brother. That's right.
Here's why. Oh. You ready?
Yeah.
In the original film, why it worked and why it was so beautiful. What was the motivation? What was the character looking for? He found it. He found it in the end.
I don't remember.
His smile.
Yeah.
Remember, okay. He told his wife, he was looking for it. He smiles. They go from a film about a guy pushing middle age that's just looking for a smile.
Mm.
And then in the second one, it's a guy in his middle age looking for gold. Fuck that. All right. There you go. City
I feel like that. Is that something that you've watched recently where you're like, old eyes are now like you're connecting with it in a different way, and that's why it's like, oh yeah, shit. Like,
no, but you know what? I want to revisit the first one for that very reason.
Yeah.
Now that you say that, I watched Election last night. Jen and I did with Matthew Broderick and Reese Witherspoon. That's a dark comedy still, but man, you couldn't make that movie today, bro. Mm-hmm. Woo!
I was watching Blank Man with my wife. With Damon Wayans and David Alex Greer. And yeah, I'm like, you can't make that movie anymore.
No, we'll have another show maybe on another channel about political correctness and pop culture. Well, anyway, on that note, we're gonna stop. All right, brother, let's get out of here. Hit some plugs and let's go.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not really on the social medias like that. I am on Instagram. It's Allure of 25, so A-L-O-V. Jeez, like I can spell it. It's my last name backwards. A-L-O-R-I-V 25 on Instagram. So if you want to hit me up there. I still also have the Fanboy Garage podcast Twitter handle or X handle. That's how long it's been. Check us out on that. But yeah, oh, man, it's always a pleasure.
Love you, buddy. And hopefully we'll see each other in person soon. Rick Hsu with Friends from Work on behalf of myself, Courtney Cheek, and Brian Chatlin. We appreciate you watching. Follow us everywhere where podcasts are found, YouTube, and we'll see you next time.